Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. This week, we continue our interview in all its shocking detail with researcher and writer Thomas Goodrich, who joins us today to lay bare the truth, the absolute fact that you, yes, you, Mr. and Mrs. Average American, have been and are supporting, funding, and participating in horrific, almost indescribable evil when you support the regime in Washington. When you fail to oppose that regime in every waking moment of your life and with every microwatt of energy in your body. In his latest book, Summer 1945, Thomas Goodrich tells us about the unspeakable horrors committed by the United States against Japan, and in supposed peacetime in an already defeated and prostrate nation against our blood kindred in Germany. When we left off last week, we were discussing the difficulty in finding witnesses to American atrocities in the Pacific theater of World War II. Difficulties primarily due to the fact that all of the witnesses, many of them disarmed prisoners, had been murdered in cold blood as a matter of American policy. We rejoin that discussion now. Listen.
So if there weren't very many survivors and so you couldn't find anyone to talk to, how did you dig up the story of what really happened?
There's enough American accounts. Some of our American soldiers, the Marines and the Army, they talk about this. Now, when they got back to the States, you know, there's a little saying about people asking Uncle Fred about what did you do in World War II, and Uncle Fred just sort of clams up and says nothing. I mean, he doesn't say anything, and people assume that it's because of what Uncle Fred saw. But I believe in most cases it's what probably Uncle Fred did, that he doesn't want to talk about it. And mm-hmm. I think when they reached their 30s and 40s, they started growing consciences and they started talking a little more about it or writing it down. Those that didn't kill themselves, that is, or those who didn't, like my biological father, didn't kill themselves by drinking and drugs. And so I got a lot of the testimony from Americans who admitted as much, who said this very same things. Charles Lindbergh, of course, he said the same thing. And people like that. The Japanese themselves, unfortunately, there just wasn't enough survivors. Those who did survive, the few, I don't recall any right now who wrote or said anything about this. So it's secondhand. But coming from the people, the victimizers who actually did this thing, that's powerful enough for me, and that's good enough for a source in my history books. But while this is going on, this island hopping, of course, and later the Okinawa especially, one of the most terrible wars and battles in human history, by the way, Okinawa. While that's going on, of course, we have what's going on in Germany. We've got the Americans occupying and the British occupying Germany in so-called peace. And the things that were going on there at the very same time, these terrible atrocities were being committed in Japan.
Yes.
Now, I do write graphic books. And some people could say I get a charge out of doing that. I don't, because I like sleeping, I like living, I like being happy, just like every other person out there listening right now wants to be that way. But I think if I tell a story, in this case war stories, if I tell it in all of its graphic horror, I think it's less likely that anybody's going to forget it than if I just pass over lightly and say they were killed or they were tortured. I don't think people are going to remember that. If they remember what I write, I think it's much less likely in the future that they will end up committing these very same crimes or
yes.
putting their name to the very same wars that create these crimes. And that's my hope. Now, maybe it's a lame hope. Maybe it's something that will never happen. But I think it could be happening for all I know right now in the Middle East. Maybe there's people who have read my books and says, this is just like the BS we did in World War II, what they're asking us to do here. So I don't have a good way of putting my finger on that, but that's what I'm going to do until the day I drop, is tell it as it really was.
I think you're doing right, Thomas. I think people need to feel as if they're seeing it themselves to really understand it.
Some of the feedback, Kevin, I've gotten, in fact, a lot of it from Hellstorm, say the very same thing, that they tell me that they never had any idea that this was going on. And some people, many people have said this, and I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing, but they tell me that they have to put the book down, that it's sucking out too much of their life from them as they read it. Invariably, they do come back, or a majority of people do come back to it, because they know I'm telling the truth. Rather, they know the people I'm quoting are telling the truth. I should say this. My books have always been first person, you are there, type of approach. In other words, I think it's much, I think the victims themselves can tell a story better than I can. And my job is to hold it together and try to make it, try to write it in a coherent way that people can understand. But when somebody is describing what they have just gone through, and they have survived, at least they're still living when the account is being recorded. I don't know an author on earth that can tell it as well as the person who passed through it, whether they're being tortured in the American and Jewish concentration camps after the war by the Jews, who basically are there to not get information from them, but simply to fulfill some sadistic fantasy about these people. I'm talking about Germans, men, women, Nazi, non-Nazi. Anyone who speaks German is a candidate for American Jewish torture pens. And anybody who's read Hellstorm knows what I'm talking about here. But I don't, the people who went through this, yes, I do quote quite a few of these people. And the people who saw them, in one case, the war was still going on, but the German Wehrmacht, they staged a counterattack against one area, one town, one city, what I forget exactly. But what they saw, yes, I used their descriptions of what they found when they went back and recaptured an area that the Soviets had conquered for briefly, and what the Jewish commissars had done to roughly 2,500 young women in the Frauenwerk, women's work auxiliary. In other words, these weren't fighting people at all. They were people who worked on roads, who worked on clothing, things like that. What had happened to them? Well, they were tortured to death, every one of them. The Soviets came in, of course, with their commissars telling them what to do. And the most beautiful were taken first. And we're talking girls. We're talking girls age roughly 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, maybe 20. And they were stripped of their clothing several at a time, maybe 10 at a time, in a warehouse type of building, with the commissar giving directions to his stooges of what to do, take their clothes off, force it off, and then cut their breasts off.
My God.
Stick things up them that hurt. I can go on. It just gets worse. But it was over relatively quickly, what went on with these girls. But swastikas carved into their bellies, on their breasts. If you can imagine the screams.
Sick.
Yes. And yes, it was. But this is what really happened. This account came from not a soldier, or there were no survivors. It came from one girl, a Brazilian, who had volunteered from Brazil to come to Germany and work with these girls, doing good things, not fighting. And she was spared because he wanted her to see this so she could spread the word of what happened, these commissars.
I knew a couple of men who participated on the American side in the World War II in Europe. One of them was a gunner on an American bomber. And he saw exactly what happened on some of those bombing runs. And he would almost never, in fact, he spent most of the time I knew him, which was several years, tearing up if anybody mentioned World War II or his service. He just simply became rigid and teared up. He would not speak of it. And then one time I was told by a family member of his that he had opened up at one time. And the reason he won't speak of it is he would have to relate how he saw innocent people in neighborhoods, kids, families, non-combatants being bombed and machine gunned. And mm-hmm. he just couldn't talk about it. Mm-hmm. There was another man, and also an American, named Poteet that I knew. And he told me how they would sometimes get German prisoners of war, and they'd take them in, bring them in, and the commanding officer would tell them, I want you to take those POWs, those German POWs, up to regional headquarters and be back in 15 minutes. And of course, regional headquarters was 250 miles away. What that really meant is take them out in the woods and kill them.
You're right on that score. That's something else I'm not hitting right now, but the Americans were taking no prisoners in the Pacific War, the Japanese. And after they got into Germany, they virtually stopped taking prisoners there as well. Many officers had a no-quarter policy. Of course, this isn't written down. It's just understood. And when SS, that was automatic death sentence for the SS to be captured by Americans. And even though some people listening may know of SS officers, men who did survive, these are the rare individuals. The Americans, once they got into Germany, and the war is still going on, by the way, technically anyway, but there was an understanding that that we would take no prisoners, and those we did take, we were going to slap them around till they give us any information they might have, and then they'll be marched to the rear, as you mentioned, as you note, generally a few hundred yards, and that's it. They're dead there. The massacres that occurred, we've heard about, hopefully most of your listeners know a little bit about the Dachau massacre at the end of the war, in which roughly 500 soldiers, German soldiers, were just massacred because the Americans propagandistic indignity at the bodies that were laying there that died from starvation and typhus and tuberculosis and in the boxcars. They saw this. They thought this is proof of the Jewish propaganda about the Germans killing Jews and putting them in railroad cars and things like that. And the Americans saw that, and they never even asked questions. They just started killing the Germans, 301 blow with machine guns. This is going on elsewhere, too. We've heard of the Dachau massacre, but I don't know how many people have heard about SS Mountain Division, 700 who were massacred in one spot. And this is going on 25, 50, 10. This is going on throughout Germany as the German forces start surrendering and come into American control. I'm ashamed. I grew up, you and I both grew up, I'm sure, loving this country, seeing the flag and feeling proud and voting Republican like our parents did early on. And then to find out that the so-called greatest generation were about as bad a generation as the earth has ever spawned in their stupid ignorance, in their belief in propaganda, so willingly accepting this type of propaganda. Their brothers, their sisters, in many cases, the men who were doing the massacring were Germans themselves.
Yeah, indeed.
And when I say that I don't know if there was any appreciable difference between what the Americans were doing to the Japanese on these islands, that is, slaughtering them and torturing them. I don't know if there's any difference between that and the war on the Western Front when the Americans got into Germany. And this is after the war is over now. When they started rounding up the not just the soldiers, but the civilians. Many of them were massacred. But
you mean that the war is over, the German armed forces effectively don't exist anymore, and the country's prostrate. What do the Allies do? What do the Americans do?
Well, there's no problem now. There's no the number one, the journalists traveling with the U.S. forces. They're mere propagandists themselves. They have to be, or they'll be sent back to the United States and never find employment ever again in their life. So they're telling only the good side. They don't mention any of the bad stuff. And the Americans can do virtually anything they want. And with a leader like Eisenhower, a German-hating maniac, a man who had never heard a bullet fired in anger in his life, a man who said to his wife, "God, I hate the Germans," a man who wanted the war to continue because he had not gotten yet enough of the world's greatest bloodbath. He wanted to continue killing more Germans in peace. And so with that filtering down rather quickly to the man holding the weapons, you can imagine what they're going to do also. Not everyone, of course. There are some people like Kurt Vonnegut, people like that, and the men that told you their stories. You and I, no, it would take much more than propaganda for us to do terrible things like many Americans did. But like any other army, there's more than enough sadists willing to live out their fantasies in the U.S. Army. And when it's accepted, or when it's even demanded among your officers from captain up, or lieutenant up, I should say, then you do it. Some of them are 18 years old, don't have a conscience yet. They haven't developed a soul. And so they just want to get the job done and get the hell out of Europe and go back home and find that girlfriend and buy that car. And so you've got people with a childlike that are willing to do anything they're told, then you have what happened in Germany and Japan, of course. But no, it's a dreadful thing, and I'm thoroughly ashamed. You know, right now, I think it's probably a pretty good time for me to say something. Kevin, I'm getting old. I doubt if I'll ever see this, but I would love to see the day come when all the modern leaders of all the former Allied nations during World War II issue a joint apology to Germany and Germans for what they did during World War II. And I'm going to tell you something, my friend. Someday that is going to happen. And they're also going to build monuments to Germany for what happened to them during World War II. When everyone finally knows it, understands it, then acts upon it, then we're going to have that change in the world. Mm. And that's what you and I are working for every day of our lives, 24/7. Now, that I may not live to see that, but then again, I might.
It's long past time.
It's long overdue. And what I'm saying here, it's not being told in a coherent way, and I apologize. In the books, hopefully, they are told coherently, so that anybody listening or anybody reading these books can understand just exactly what we did. And then we would have the guts, the gall, the audacity to call ourselves, our soldiers back then, the greatest generation, and that monstrosity that they fought the good war. Of course, this is all Jewish inventions. That's the way they want it. That's the way they want it to this day. That's why that movie, the name I couldn't come up with, continues. Very similar to the same way that the propaganda back then went.
Well, Americans are still clueless. They're clueless about what happened then, and they're clueless about how they're being used now as a cat's paw for these international Jewish interests who have one hell of a lot of blood on their hands. And the dupes who fall for their propaganda and do their bidding, I'm sorry, they're responsible too, even if they are dupes. They have blood on their hands, and they're clueless. They don't know what's going on.
Here's what I will say to that, Kevin. I get a lot of emails. I get a lot of Skype calls, things like that. I talk with a lot of people. I know you do as well. My thought is a bit different from yours. I think every day more and more people do know what happened. They won't say it because there has not been critical mass yet. Power has not come completely to our side. It's rushing to us with the speed of light. We can't tell right now because we're humans. We're not endowed with telescopic vision. But it is coming with the speed of light, and eventually we will reach critical mass. And these people I'm talking about that I talk to on a daily basis, they know it and they will come to our side. You know, weakness is drawn to strength. And when it finally all comes to us, then they will come over. It's a pity they don't act on their own right now, but they will eventually. So I think every day that passes, every day we have the computer, every day that people click that mouse and search for something they've been thinking about, and there it is, that's another person that comes to our side, at least as far as the truth of World War II. And so I'm disappointed, of course, that people just don't rise up on their own. But I believe it's coming, and I'm here to work to make sure that day comes quicker than later. Yeah. That's what keeps us motivated. That's what keeps both you and I going and all of our people. And by the way, I want to add this. Some of the people who have come to me are not just people sitting on a fence, taking in their retirement pay, the Social Security. Some of these people are some of the best and the brightest in their fields. Let me say this. Let me say something. I've said this before, so it's not that original, but I actually had an Academy Award winning director approach me about a film on Hellstorm.
Wow.
Now, this person, it wasn't Mel Gibson either, by the way. I know a lot of people are thinking about him. It was someone else. They didn't do the film, probably because they knew they would never do another film if they did one. But it's people like that that do get a hold of me, say, I have read Hellstorm, and it changed their life. It absolutely changed their life. So there are still some really important, powerful people out there that once this critical mass is reached, they will be over with both feet, trust me, and it'll be like night and day.
Well, I like your positive attitude, Thomas.
The turnaround, my friend, will be like night and day. It seems so dark and dreary at times, but that day is coming.
You're making me smile.
Our enemy knows it, because you wouldn't, if someone was winning, they wouldn't be doing the stupid things they're doing right now, like censorship, the banning, the threats that are now in the open out there. They simply wouldn't do it. They'd do it like they'd done it in the past, subtly, because now they're waking everybody up with
they're deplatforming too.
Yes, and it's a fear. It's certainly not strength. It's weakness, and we're going to see a hell of a lot more of that. But guess what? We're dealing with it, and we move on, working for that final victory that we're all looking for.
You've been listening to part two of American Evil, an interview with Thomas Goodrich. Be watching Cosmotheist books online at cosmotheistchurch.org. That's cosmotheistchurch, all one word, .org. For the edition of Mr. Goodrich's Summer 1945, the book we've been discussing here today, and other works by this superb truth-telling author, once again, that's cosmotheistchurch.org. Be sure to join us again next week for part three of this important interview. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom for American Dissident Voices. You've been listening to American Dissident Voices, the radio program of the National Alliance. The National Alliance is working to educate white men and women around the world as to the nature of the reality we must face, and organizing our people to ensure our survival and advancement. We very much need your help to continue. It is almost impossible in today's environment for those who advocate for our race to have an ordinary source of income. Keep us publishing. Keep us on the air. Keep us advocating for you by sending your contribution to National Alliance, Box 4, Mountain City, Tennessee, 37683, USA. Or help us by visiting natall.com/donate. That's natall.com/donate. Once again, our postal address is Box 4, Mountain City, Tennessee, 37683, USA. Until next week, this is Kevin Alfred Strom reminding you to do right and fear no one.
For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes arise as we shout to the skies. We will now have our rebirth. For blood and for soil, we will work, we will toil. Heaven is born on the earth. The heroes arise as we shout to the skies. Shout.